At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to Directly Current. I'm your host, Max Patton. This week, I'm speaking with the founder and CEO of a very exciting charging startup, Electric Era. It's Quincy Lee, formerly a SpaceX engineer who has set his team's sights on building the best fast charging hardware and software available. They're vertically integrated into a package that's pretty sleek and an attractive option to retailers, particularly in a real world where lots of EV charging, even if it's reliable, sometimes pretty confusing and honestly hostile to the customer and maybe even just annoying to maintain and deploy for brands that actually want to host chargers on their land. Yes, I'm talking about charging providers that make you install bespoke apps on your phone with an account and a password you need to remember, and those horror stories you probably read about fast chargers taking months to deploy. Those are the problems that Quincy is hoping to solve, and I think they're doing a great job at Electric Era. We're going to get into what they're doing at the business and specifically some hot news this last month with the new retail edge hardware they announced. Yes, it's an AI-enabled charger, but don't roll your eyes. It's actually a pretty cool use case they've envisioned for how it's going to help customers and make it a lot easier to charge your EV. What I find fascinating is that Quincy and his team don't view chargers as just software or hardware. They really are taking the Apple or the Tesla approach of truly thinking about this as an end-to-end product. They've built something that's interoperable, resilient, and they're doing a lot of validation testing to make sure it's not going to disappoint people in the real world. Let's get into it. Quincy Lee, welcome back to Directly Current. Thanks so much for coming on again. So Electric Era, let's just refresh listeners in case they're not familiar. What do you guys do with charging and what are you up to?
Yeah, good to be back, Max, and always a pleasure to talk to you. Electric Era builds EV fast charging stations for retailers that are electrifying their mobility solutions for the next generation of drivers. So we basically help build the entire EV fast charging station, all the software supporting servicing and the retail integrations into the store for our customers' EV charging stations. So we do this for a variety of retailers, including folks like Love's Truck Travel Center or Costco or smaller mom and pops. So everyone in between as well.
Yeah. And you've got some pretty exciting announcements from earlier this month. So you've been working on your own hardware for a while, but now you have the Retail Edge platform, which I think is the culmination of a few things you guys have been working on. But can you summarize what that looks like, what it looks like both for a retailer who's interested in that system and also the customer who's going to be using that for their EV?
Yeah. So we started this kind of Skunkworks type program about a year and a half ago, really trying to answer the fundamental question, how can we make EV fast charging even better for drivers, first and foremost, and for our customers, the retailers that we just talked about? And at the time, we identified a bunch of different gaps that we wanted to solve, right? We wanted to solve some issues around first shot reliability that we were running into at that point. We wanted to also solve some size issues. Most charging stations are really big and bulky, and they don't fit in a lot of places. So that drives up installation costs and installation timelines and the places and decreases the number of places you can build charging. We wanted to also solve issues relating to how the driver interacted with the charger, making it more immersive, interactive, and ultimately more intelligent to drive utility ultimately to the EV driver, meaning functionality and capabilities. So all of these different questions were swirling in our head probably back in early 2024, maybe even late 2023. And we started to put pen to paper to build out what you refer to as Retail Edge, which is the new name of the charger. Your audience can find more information about this on our website if you go to electricera.tech. But all of that culminated in this new product we've built, which is, I like to refer to it as the kind of iPhone of EV charging. It's a sleek, modern, very sexy and friendly looking dispenser that comes with a screen, a speakerphone, a microphone, a 400 kilowatt quart, and will also be able to charge cars with first shot reliability at the 90% level. So think of the Tesla experience, but for Electric Era. We're currently at about 92%. We'll be taking that up to 99%. The station includes also, very importantly, a digital intelligence, which we call Halo. This is an AI system we built internally. It actually is able to talk to the driver and help answer a wide array of questions and even take actions on their behalf. And of course, it includes things like an immersive bright screen and a variety of other features that really make driving the charging experience even better. So we just launched that last week, and the reception we've fielded so far has been incredible. People are super stoked about this. I think this is like our big Rivian moment, where we're now thought of as a full stack company in a more conclusive way. And we're really excited about where we're taking the brand of the business.
Yeah, there's clearly a lot of engineering effort that went into the new cabinet, into the new interface. And there's two things there that, you know, are important, right? The one is the reliability side of it, right? You said increasing that, meeting the needs at 400 kilowatts, which is still basically the maximum. Basically, every vehicle in the U.S. can do right now, much better than a lot of already deployed DC charging. Pretty thin profile, but like you said, that big change in the interface, having kind of an AI chat assistant that speaks with people and they can speak to, I can immediately see how that is helpful for something that's as confusing as EV charging. So I guess the question that follows from that is, I can see someone asking like, okay, how much range am I going to get? Those kinds of questions. But lots of the nerdy advice I'm forced to give my relatives or people I know who are renting an EV are things like, what EV do you have? What voltage is it? That might dictate what you're actually charging at. These are things no normal person can really be expected to understand. And yet that's what I feel like early adopters like myself have been asked to understand right now. So is that something that the model on board these chargers can help people with?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So way back in 2024, we started to really see a massive growth in our work usage. We also saw corresponding growth in the number of drivers calling our tier one call center. So Electric Era, we host tier one call center on behalf of our customers. Drivers will call into it and ask these types of questions that you alluded to. And so we look at these questions and realized we realized basically we can help directly answer these with a real-time assistant right on the device. As opposed to waiting 10 minutes to get an answer, we can give a user an answer in less than 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. On a long tail of questions that drivers have about how to charge their car, which payments they can take, how long it's going to take, why is the charging slow, how much is it going to cost, if they can get a discount, what connector they can use, and many other different things, right? And so that's exactly the use case that we had in mind when we built Aero. It's this tier one call center replacement to provide a more streamlined real-time experience for the driver and questions that they're already thinking about and answering. And from there, we realized, hey, if they're going to ask questions about this, and we're going to help them solve those types of questions relating to basically how do I use my charging station, we can probably answer all these other questions around what's available for me to do while I'm charging my car.
Yeah.
And that's where we see a large amount of increased utility for both the driver and our customer, bringing those types of retailer insights or discoverability insights, like is there a park store for me to walk my dog, to the dispenser with a real-time interface and Halo AI.
Yeah. And I love that kind of full stack. Obviously, that's an opportunity for your customers, for retailers, for advertisers. But I'm thinking of in ways, people who use that still on their dashboard in their car if they don't have CarPlay or a Tesla or something. And it has the advertisements for things coming up on the highway. Those have always annoyed me because that's like a context switch of like, you're driving right now. But by the way, have you thought about going to Wendy's? Whereas like in the EV charging context, you are going to be somewhere for 20 minutes. And speaking for myself, speaking for a lot of EV drivers I know, I really would love to know where I could actually go to use a bathroom, to get food, all of those things. And so I actually see a really natural opportunity that I'm glad you guys have seized on for that. My next question is just from a expertise standpoint, developing great charging hardware. It's great. It's something you guys have already proven. This is an iteration of that. When it comes to this kind of software layer, having the real-time chat interface, you run into AI validation, making sure hallucinations aren't harmful to people and don't confuse them, right? These are issues we've seen all across the board in the industry with AI products, far beyond EV charging. But when you're applying it to this context, dealing with retailers and fuel stations who are going to be using this product, what kind of expertise from your team applies now? Because I feel like this is much more of a software product at this point. And obviously you integrate that into the hardware, but I feel like that's a different set of expertise. What are the kinds of upgrades you've made organizationally or just in terms of talent to enable that?
Yeah, I think we're building from a strong bedrock of software capabilities so that have given us the ability to launch the product that customers know and love about Electric Era to date, which requires skills and ultimately talent that are pretty honestly applicable to building in the AI space as well. Mm-hmm. Launching like production code that scales and is fault tolerant and is resilient to things like a Azure outage happens to be a really good skill set if you want to go build AI systems that are production capable as well. There's obviously like some kind of edge competencies that we had to add to our team regarding like building generative AI products that we ultimately added to, but it was an addition to a really strong internal core, has ultimately its origin story even way back in the Starlink constellation days. Our VP of software, Thermosiri, built out the entire bus software system for the Starlink satellite. Mm-hmm. They integrated that with the Gateway Ground Station internet program where we first worked together. So this kind of capability to build production code has been in the DNA of the company for a long time. And over time, of course, we've learned and added this new skill set to that to help us launch our newest product, Halo. But you're right. It is a super hardcore challenge, right? It's really hard to get stable, non-hallucinating code that can't be exploited to say weird things operating across the country. We still have lots of improvements we want to make to it, but the initial demo that we released is actually like quite good. Mm-hmm. Demos are never production, to be super clear. You should always be skeptical of demos. I personally am always skeptical of demos. So we hold ourselves to a really high bar, and we do have more work to do, undoubtedly. But we're excited about the skills that we've gained and the systems that we put into place with our initial V1 product.
Yeah, I will link the demo, but you did one on the show floor recently in a busy environment. I feel like that's a good validation that the technology at some level works. Right. Obviously, I'm sure launching this product for real, the edge cases are going to come up. Your team is going to be up to its neck and actually the 99% to 100%. But still, that's very encouraging. And I mentioned that point because there's been others, and not necessarily even just in the EV charging industry, but let's look at the automotive industry, right? Everyone is abuzz with generative AI right now. And you have OEMs, who I won't name, who have basically just put a thin wrapper on ChatGPT in the car. Now, will that roll down your windows when you ask it? Will it actually be a fully implemented voice assistant? No. Even Tesla did this with Grok. Grok is a great general purpose LLM. Does it really control your Tesla right now? No. So it's still early days in terms of how this is being integrated in the space, but it seems it's encouraging that you guys are actually thinking about this as to applying to how it's being used, right? It's that context that feels important, the constraints. I'm assuming you're building off like a powerful foundation model that already exists for it, but you guys have specialized this for your purpose. And I'd like to see that it's not just AI for AI's sake. I can actually see how customers are really going to like this. So in terms of deploying this, yes.
That last part is... Apologies for interrupting. I just wanted to highlight a really important point you made, which is the integration to the hardware.
Yeah.
That's where the difficulties really are. Like, we've had to invest in build some pretty sophisticated software systems that control the audio system and allow for saturation of the context window with that data and the interface to the actual charger power controller PCBA. So we actually also designed, as part of this big effort, implementation of power control.
Yeah.
So the CCC interface to the car that basically controls the car to charger and the ISO 15118 layer implementation. We've done that all in-house. And because we have low-level PCBA expertise in-house and the firmware that controls it in-house, we can actually pull that data out into the context window. So the AI is able natively to be populated with these relevant low-level hardware features and insights, whether it be audio or power, really level up the actual utility value of the use case. It's not just a wrapper pulling from ChatGPT, as you described earlier. It's like this deep integration and context window management pulling from the core hardware.
And that's some great nerdery you brought up there, right? Like the deep level hardware integration, again, not going to name names, but other people in the charging space, I do feel like the corner has been turned and that like the hardware now at a base level for will it charge your EV, it's much more reliable across the board. Tesla superchargers have been great for a while, but obviously Alpitronic, some of the other off-the-shelf solutions have gotten really good. And yet at the same time, I can't help but notice, we just had my boss Mike complain about this on a podcast episode he was on, that you go to an Iona station and what do you see? You see an off-the-shelf card reader with a dim screen. And it's great that it's contactless, but like that to me is the weak link of that experience. You have this pretty good charging hardware that's not very meaningfully integrated with, in my opinion, an actually friendly experience.
we're big believers in vertical integration because of exactly that point. If you have hyper control and vertically integrated design, you have better product experiences for the consumer, product experiences for the retailer. You have the ability to release software faster, make design changes quicker in the hardware stack as well. Mm-hmm. You can reduce costs, and everything integrates more seamlessly with each other, yeah. which is the ultimate goal that drives the better product experiences. So we're pro control, we're pro vertical integration. We think it leads to better products for everybody that will ultimately push the industry forward, excuse me.
And I can see all of that obviously has immediate benefits to the user and being easier to chart, easier to ask questions at, more reliable, more transparent, right? Sharing real-time status. All this is great. The thing I'm thinking of for the retailer who you're really honing in on now as a client is what is appealing to them about Electric Era hardware and software compared to going with another solution?
I think it's a lot of the things that we talked about earlier. The sleek, very thin footprint is a really great representation of their brand. Because when a retailer chooses to partner with us, they're basically saying, okay, Electric Era, you're our guy, you're our team, and we're putting our trust in you that you're going to represent our big box retailer brand at the level that we hold the rest of our business units to. Mm-hmm. And if you fail them on that, you're jeopardizing their core company. Everything that we do, we think of in that light. It goes all the way down to the aesthetics of the charger dispenser. Mm-hmm. We want the aesthetics to be beautiful, to be delighting and easy to use, light handles, easy to plug in, high reliability. All those things very much matter to the retailer because their brand is their business. Right. That's what they'll tell you. My brand's my business, right? That's their big differentiator, the unique ways that they delight and please the consumer base. That's their brand. That's their business. Mm-hmm. So things that stand out are the footprint, the kind of the asset, the fact that it's higher power really matters to people. They want to future-proof their dispensers. The fact that it's higher reliability. The fact that it has a very immersive screen mm-hmm. with an audio input and output system is very important because that's how they create kind of a multimodal link with the consumer when they show up, sharing yeah. insights that will be helpful. All of that has really resonated, I think, with customers we've shared it to.
Yeah. And not to say that you guys are obviously not in the position Volta was in, but I just mentioned their name because when I think of what you said, again, reiterated with that bright and colorful screen, that great integration, that was some of the promise, and listeners may be familiar with this company that Volta made with their level two, mostly charging hardware for retailers. Obviously, they ran into issues. The charging industry, as exciting as it is, fraught with risk. So what do you think are the unique differentiators that you guys have aside from the high power, the hardware is great? Is it just the like next level of the premiumness and the experience? Or what do you think it is that makes this really compelling for that kind of fast charging situation?
Yeah, there's so many differences. And first of all, I think Volta gets a hard rap. I have a lot of respect for the kind of idea that they had and mm-hmm. how they were thinking beyond just electrons. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of brilliance in that.
Yeah.
I think the kind of execution wasn't where it needed to be to scale such a fast growing company. And in many ways, they were victims of their own success because if you'll recall, they went public and they really raised all this money at the height of the kind of AI, or I guess it was a different boom period, but the EV period yeah. during the peak of inflation.
And that burned a lot of people, to be fair.
That's a lot. That burned a lot of people, undoubtedly, but it also is really hard for a company to take in that much money unless you really know how to use it.
Yeah.
This is like a big problem with raising too much money early on is you're just not set up to use it well. So I think they got boondoggled on the execution, but the idea was great.
Yeah.
There are many differences between kind of our core business and their core business. Like they were designed to be a charging network. We're designed to be a solution provider.
Yep.
So that's like a very different part of the ontological stack. They were a level two business. We're predominantly focused on level three. They only focused on DC fast charging at the very end. So I wouldn't even call them a fast charging company. They were very much a level two company.
Yep.
Then there's more kind of superficial level differences. Like their product was, I think, much bigger than what we have. It was a much bigger screen, much mm-hmm. bigger asset. We're aiming for sleek and simple, something that's even half or a third of the total thickness.
Yep.
And shorter and less wide. So aesthetic differences as well shine out. Finally, I think even for their systems, as fast as they were charging were maybe 50 kilowatts or maybe 75 kilowatts.
Yeah.
This is like a premium 400 kilowatt charger.
Yep.
So quite different. So lots of differences, but I don't want to knock the team. I think that they were thinking about the right things, just didn't maybe execute as well as they needed to in a challenging market.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I wanted to bring them up, not in the context of, again, shaming, but also recognizing they did something pretty unique that I see some of in your guys' products now, even though they are very different. In that they met other challenges. And like you said, there's other things at the time where, you know, the EV bubble at that moment was very real. And now we're very much in a moment where companies have to, in some ways, stand on their own 2 feet. It's a much harder environment to get capital in. You come from a SpaceX background. You have a lot of talent on the team. You have this differentiated technology now. So I assume all of those are advantages. And yet you're still, when we're talking about Tesla or at a smaller scale, Alpitronic, like, you were competing with pretty big players at different levels of the chain. Maybe none of them are as integrated as you are. But when you're like, what I'm thinking of a retailer who's like looking at electric era hardware, the sleekness, the premiumness, those are all great selling points. But I remember like in the early days, right, you guys would, your deployment times are so fast as well. And that's, I feel like, a unique where being a smaller company, my intuition is you guys can be a little more lean with that. You have the battery buffer technology. Can you speak to a little bit to how you guys are able to deploy quickly and potentially maybe move a little easier in this industry as a smaller, more integrated player?
Yeah, I think I'll remind everybody about the initial supply chain shocks during COVID when Tesla couldn't get chips and they redesigned their entire firmware stack around a different chipset.
Mm-hmm.
So a massive giant company that is doing on the order of 28 billion of revenue a quarter was able to operate extremely nimbly and quickly. It's not that we're necessarily small. I mean, that helps to a degree, but frankly, that's not the real reason we're able to move so fast. It's actually because of the way that we architected the business with vertical integration in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have engineers that can go write new firmware interfaces for different chips in that example, where if we couldn't get chips, we would just literally buy new chips and we'd be back on track and be able to fulfill orders.
Mm-hmm.
With this latest product release, we're further vertically integrating, giving ourselves full manufacturing and design control over the entire dispenser interface, removing a dependency or partially removing a dependency. We're still going to work with SK Signet, to be clear,
but yeah,
partially removing a dependency that gives us the ability to be more nimble and faster. It's really that. It's the vertical integration, the speed that we get from it, the nimbleness that we get from it, that allows us to do really intelligent things. That plus obviously the enabling technology around the battery buffer and the grid management technologies that are patented and quite valuable IP that give us just speed to market advantages that no one else can match. It's those two things together.
Yeah. The other thing I want to hone in on is, you said this earlier, compared to other CPOs, you guys are not necessarily, you're not holding yourself out as a charging network, even though there is a map on the site you can see with electric era sites. You guys are giving solutions in that kind of more business to business context. So when it comes to, I'm thinking of like Walmart and these other brands are exploring EV charging, they're doing loyalty programs, special payments and coupons and those kinds of things. What does your vertical integration, or how does the way electric era work, how does that benefit these kinds of integrations with the customers using them? Like, when I imagine, okay, it's great that I can tap to pay with a card, but I know some retailers are really big on their membership system. So when it comes to those kinds of integrations, how do you guys approach that?
Example, a great call out. And this is super important. So for one example with discoverability, like because we have really good fidelity at a low level, we can publish all of our locations and really unique insights about those locations that others cannot, such as stall availability, price, real-time price, uptime per port, what retailer is on site, and many other things in our OCPI feed.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, published across Google Maps, Apple Maps, PlugShare, and other applications. Mm-hmm. So that's one example. And then another level of vertical integration that gets us a really important link, is relevant as a solution to the customer, is fact. We can write dynamic and malleable APIs that are read-writable into and out of the retailer databases so that they can pull their like kind of loyalty program insights and or relevant consumer identification details into the charging experience using our solutions and tools. So that if you Mac show up in a Wawa, you can be identified, get points, earn points, or earn points and burn points into the store, forming a deeper and better relationship with Wawa in a way that you might not be able to at Sheetz, who's their rival and who doesn't use our product. to be clear, neither of these companies use our product yet, but this was a hypothetical example of deeper integration than what it gets the driver and the retailer. Vertical integration, think of it like you're building a house and you know how to do every part of it yourself. If you need to make a change to the foundation, you can. If you don't in the foundation, then you have to go work with some other person who's going to charge you a lot more money and be a lot slower than you would be yourself. That kind of mental model, you could apply it to every level of the charging software stack and charging hardware stack now.
Yeah.
That's what we, and this is how we see further powering our rapid growth into the future.
Yeah. And I want to touch on one of the nerdier notes there, right? OCPI, for people who aren't familiar, as I understand, right? The big knock has been for a while with EV charging, particularly for people who don't have a Tesla or even a Rivian, which they have great, obviously, partner integrations. Lots of other vehicles don't have a pretty poor experience for showing real-time charging status. I would say even across the industry, I don't think there's a single vehicle that would show you amazing real-time status for all the charging networks. We're just not at that standardized level yet. So when it comes to the fact that you guys are very integrated with the software stack, but you also play with interoperability with some of these things that are public, how important do you think that is, the aspect of discoverability, the aspect of sharing status so that when I'm in Google Maps, I can see, oh, three or four stations available? Like, how seriously do you guys take that?
Corey, drivers are the root of all value in the industry. If we don't have discoverability, they won't ever know where our charging stations are, and therefore our customer will not make any monies.
Yeah.
So it's like literally the most important thing. And we also, as that, with that framing in mind of drivers are the root of all value in the industry, we have all these other design considerations built around the driver interface. Like the handle should be easy to use, should be easy to plug in, should have high success rates. The payment should be easy to use. The voice interface for Halo AI should be really pleasant and audible. Like it shouldn't be hard to understand. It shouldn't be unintelligible. It shouldn't hallucinate, because that'll create a bad experience for the driver. Driver, why, even though we're not a network, a traditional charging network like Electrify America, we put ourselves in a position where we obsess about the driver on behalf of our customers because they are networks.
Yeah.
So we act as like that intermediary for them and really aim to give drivers an exceptional, delighting experience for every dimension of their charging session.
Yeah. And it's great to hear. You're coming off this, and so, even though you're not a network, you have expanded your installations in part thanks to the ongoing whole saga over NEVI, new guidance for that, right? You guys have won out big in some places like California for that, and that's important too. But looking into the next few years where there's substantially fewer, especially like federally funded availability for charging, state programs, their coffers aren't unlimited, what do you think are the challenges of meeting private customers and of growing charging amid the times we live in now, where EV growth, people speculate it might slow down now that there aren't tax incentives. Maybe we're entering some kind of EV winter, some pessimistic people might imply. At the same time, obviously, Rivian scaling out their affordable products, sales are still actually pretty good overall. But at the same time, right, people do have their doubts. How do you approach, what's your framework for looking at the challenges of the moment with the EV industry as a whole, as it comes to you guys expanding and growing?
Yeah, I think that when people say we're entering an EV winter, it's really a kind of a misframing of what that, you know, what's actually happening on the ground. Like we're talking about going from a 40% compounding annual growth rate, which is where we were roughly in 2021 as an industry, down to about a 15% compounding annual growth rate, but it's still growing 15% annually in a compounding sense, which gives you roughly triple the number of EVs that we have on the roads today by 2030.
Yeah.
So we're still going to triple the EV base. So if that's slow in 5 years, I guess I might be misthinking it, but that doesn't feel slow to me. It's like, oh my gosh, how are we going to build the charging stations that meet the demand where it is and where it's going today? And lots of folks have done analysis on like the slowdown and what that means. And that's that 15% compounding annual growth rate is like the conservative case. Frankly, we need a lot more EV charging. And I think we want to build that charging in a way that creates like a real world commercial ROI, return on investment for the customer, in absence of any sort of government subsidy. So this is why we're so obsessive about a really good driver experience, because it means drivers will actually go there. If we can start pulling Tesla drivers in and Rivian drivers in all the volume, for the customer, which we do a good job of, then they see a really a good ROI and they can invest without needing a subsidy. And then furthermore, if we can create a link to the store and to drive retail commerce, that's even a viral ROI. Mm-hmm. And that's like where the industry needs to go anyways. Like, we shouldn't have government subsidies forever, of course. Mm-hmm. Really, it doesn't make sense to do that because it just starts to pad the cost and reduces discipline. We need discipline. We don't want padded costs because then the industry can't thrive. We're just trying to get there early and create products that drive that positive ROI in the absence of subsidies. We're happy to like go and help get those subsidies on behalf of the customer in the interim, but long term, the product will need to stand on its own 2 feet.
Yeah. And I guess just my last question is, how close do you feel like, or do you feel like we're there in the sense of a product? I mean, in terms of approaching profitability for delivering affordable electrons to people, making the customers, making everyone happy along the way in that chain, in terms of that being totally self-sustaining, I know you mentioned like right now and where it's imminently growing, there aren't enough chargers, but how close do you think we are to this ideal full sustainability for EV charging and for this model being able to work?
Yeah, I think I'll share some insights that we have from our customers confidentially or anonymously rather, but a lot of our customers are thinking about just the number of vehicles, roads across America and the number of vehicles that are in their parking lot that are electric as a really good leading indicator of just inherent profitability. Mm-hmm. And the way to think about that is if you have 100 drivers and 12 of them are EV, that would be 12 sessions a day on a stall, let's say. That would be a pretty attractive charging station. If you only have 5, you're at a low enough threshold where the return on invested capital doesn't make as much sense. If you go to 20, now you're making money. Now you're pretty happy. And that investment in EV actually starts to rival like a new store build out. Hmm. So the more EVs ultimately are the leading indicator of where health and pure profitability or pure sustainability of the ecosystem really drives from. And today we're at like, depending on where you're at in the country, anywhere between 5% and 25%. On average, maybe we're at 10%, roughly 10% of EVs mm-hmm. in a parking lot could be, or 10% of cars in a parking lot could be electric, ballpark numbers. As we scooch up to 15 to 20%, the industry is going to be pretty healthy. That's where I think we need to get before we can really think of this thing as a sustainable flywheel,
yeah.
Which frankly is coming pretty quick. And that's exciting. I encourage people, if they're interested in driving electric, to go and test drive a car. I think it's a pretty fantastic experience that ultimately is better for the consumer and better for the planet. So win-win. And over time, I think consumers will drive that adoption to the levels we need to be fully unsubsidized as an industry, which is a great endpoint that we all need to be getting to.
Yeah, agreed. And I love the way you and the team are meeting the moment in electric era. We'll link Retail Edge and that info for people in the description. Thank you so much, Quincy Lee, for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here with you.
Always a great time speaking with Quincy. Truly one of the most driven people I've spoken to for this podcast and an amazing founder. Love what he and his team are doing. And you can follow that in the link in the description for Electric Era. Hope to see some more of those stations near where I am in Colorado soon. If you want to stay tuned to Directly Current and hear about the exciting guest we have in the EV automotive industry coming up, well, you can subscribe to the podcast in whichever app you use, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. We're on all of them. The link is also in your show notes or description. You can check out the work that we're doing at EVs for All America, also at the website link there. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.